PSNY.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into a new episode of the Knicks State of Mind podcast. Matt Castillo here with Chip Murphy and our special guest for this episode. Again, the only way to introduce you is clearly the brains behind Knick Film School, Andrew Claudio. Andrew, thank you for joining us again today.
Guys, thank you for having me on. I will accept that designation, the brains behind Knicks Film School. I'm definitely not the face. The gorgeous mugs of John Macri and Jeremy Cohen obviously take the reins there. So I'm happy to be the behind-the-scenes mastermind, even though that's not exactly what you said. That's what you implied, which I'll take.
That's what I was going for. Absolutely. Obviously. Yeah, absolutely. But not only are you killing it with Knicks Film School, you started the new podcast, The Final Review, and a couple episodes out already. I have not got a chance yet to listen. And, you know, I've been looking through, and I've seen you were talking about The Dark Knight, one of my favorite movies. So I'm definitely going to go check that out. But tell us a little bit more about this podcast. What's behind it? What should fans and listeners expect to hear from this new podcast?
Well, two things. First of all, the first episode we did was The Social Network, the 2010 classic from David Fincher and Aaron Sorkin. And it's why, Matt, I need to correct you. The key scene in The Social Network is when Justin Timberlake says, "Drop the."
Just, I knew you were going to do that.
Yep. So it's not The Final Review. It's just Final Review. It's cleaner, you know, in the words of Sean Parker. The idea behind the show is that we're going through the Hall of Fame of movies, the greatest movies of all time, under three different categories: critically, financially, and a claim. So you have to have at least be certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. You have to be have grossed at least $100 million at the box office domestically, and you have to have been nominated for an Academy Award. You need to hit two of those checkpoints in order to qualify for a final review. And we're discussing, basically, we're trying to find a numeric value on greatness. So I'll do an example for you guys real quick. Matt, name a movie you consider an all-time great that might meet those qualifications.
Man, putting me on the spot here.
I'm literally saying any movie. Like, what's your favorite movie of all time?
Oh, gosh. I mean,
okay, one of your favorite movies of all time. I get how this could be on the spot. Just name
I don't know.
That's a really hard question, your favorite movie.
Uh-huh. Name a great movie, then.
I mean, I don't know if it fits in that category, but I'm a big Adam Sandler guy, and Happy Gilmore is one of those movies I can watch all the time.
Okay.
So I'll start there. Is that if that falls in that category?
I don't know. It's interesting. Oz and I were talking because we have the schedule planned very far in advance. And ironically, we don't have a Sandler movie on there, which is unfortunate. But if you look at he's someone that's been generally panned by critics and has never been invited to the Oscars. So it's tough to find a Sandler movie, which is kind of depressing that I may never get to talk about Adam Sandler on the pod. But we'll go with Happy Gilmore for now. Chip, name a great movie that you love. Any great movie.
Goodfellas.
Now, how in the world would we compare Goodfellas to Happy Gilmore? They're like artist subjective. These are two different genres. These may be considered both all-time greats, but there's no way to actually tell. Like, your opinions might be different than my opinions. Your opinions together might be different. But what we've come up with is a system, a formula that actually gives you a numeric value based off of a bunch of top five lists. So for Happy Gilmore, we do 10 different top five lists for the movie. So is Happy Gilmore a top five comedy? Is Happy Gilmore a top five Adam Sandler movie? Is Happy Gilmore a top five 90s movie? Is Happy Gilmore a top five movie the year it came out? Is Happy Gilmore a top five golf movie? And so on and so forth. And we highlight some areas that the movie is strong. We point out some areas where the movie is lacking or some nitpicks here and there. And we come up with a score at the end of the list of categories. So out of 50. And then your percentage is where the movie falls in that Hall of Fame of movies. So say Happy Gilmore comes up with a 30 out of 50. So that means it's in the 60th percentile all time. Goodfellas, spoiler alert, a movie we're doing in a couple weeks. A movie that may be higher on the list. It may get a 40 out of 50. So it's in the 80th percentile of the Hall of Fame of movies. And the key thing that I want to emphasize is, like, if you heard the Dark Knight episode, which I think is now a segue for whatever Chip wants to say, I'm just going to, I'm giving you the floor if you'd like to give me some feedback, believe me. Oz and I greatly disagree on the Dark Knight. I think it's an all-time great. And if you heard the episode, he has a bit more of a higher standard for his movies than I do. And as a result, you know, where the Dark Knight falls on his pantheon is much lower when it is on mine. We want all of you playing at home to also come up with your own top five list. As you're going, I'm like, oh, what is my top five Christopher Nolan movie? What is my top five Christian Bale movie? And it emphasizes the point that art is subjective and everybody's tastes are different, while also giving everybody a formula to quantify what greatness actually looks like. That is the point and the thought behind Final Review. New episodes every Thursday.
I like it.
Thank you.
Like that, that's got me pumped up to start listening.
There you go.
Oh my gosh.
Now, are you a fan of The Dark Knight?
I love The Dark Knight. Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites.
That keep that same energy of being pumped up when you go into the episode is all I'll say. Chip, your tweet had me dying today. Chip was like, The Dark Knight's one of my favorite movies of all time. Despite everything that happens in this episode, I highly recommend this podcast.
I mean that 100%. Uh-huh. I love Andrew. You're great. And I still love the podcast. And I think I DM'd you after the first episode.
You did.
I've never really watched a lot of Aaron Sorkin stuff except for like Moneyball, and I never really got into even like the West Wing, but I'm probably going to go back and watch The Social Network after listening to that.
I never watched that. I've never seen that before, actually.
It's obviously one of my all-time faves.
Yeah, the way you guys talk about it makes me want to go back and watch it, to be honest. Mm. So that's how good that podcast was.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it was great. But the Dark Knight episode. Yeah. Again, you talked about people want to have discussions. I was having discussions with myself.
That's usually what makes it so good when you're listening to something and you're sitting there talking to yourself. Like, no. Or, you know, like that's how you know it's good.
On my lunch break, like a crazy person, like, what is he talking about?
It's not crazy, Chip. You're not crazy, Chip. That's normal.
What's happening? There's five DC movies better than The Dark Knight?
That's where he lost me. I will say that. That's where he lost me a little bit. However, I do understand his point. And I think what we both can't, like Oz, my co-host, I should say, Bernardo Zrowski, who is a lawyer by trade, but a film critic by hobby and has a film catalog that is unprecedented. His, like in my research for these episodes, I rewatch a lot of movies, and a lot of it is going to Oz's Vudu account, which has over 6,700 movies in it. And it's like, oh, I need to watch all of the Christian Bale movies. Great. Oz has all of them available. His Criterion collection is vast. His taste in movies is a little more particular than the common man, which is why the yin and yang of both of us makes sense. And he tends to think The Dark Knight is one of the more overrated movies of all time. Just a heads up for you, Matt, going into the episode. However, the one thing that's unimpeachable is Heath Ledger, which I think we appropriately celebrated. And I honestly agree with him on the fact that the rest of the stuff in the movie outside of Ledger can be a little bit superhero BS at times. So it's where he emphasizes the superhero BS ruining the movie that I disagree. And it's where, like, I can't, like, agree that Hellboy 2 is better than The Dark Knight, you know?
Well,
you know, I did wonder while we were recording how many people would end up with Chip's reaction. It's like, all right, so you're really going in on it this time.
Whoa, did he just say Hellboy 2? Uh-huh. He's saying Michael Bay and Hellboy 2, and what's happening right now? Not that I care too much about Christopher Nolan. I don't have an emotional attachment to him. as much as I do that particular movie. That, it meant a lot to me seeing that movie. Yet, like, Batman's very important to me. I love the character. I love that movie. That movie came out when I was a freshman in college. I was going through a lot of shit in my life, and that movie was great. I love seeing that movie. I saw it in IMAX. Obviously, it was great. It was one of the only movies I've ever seen in IMAX. It was just so much fun to watch that movie. And you're right about one thing. Heath Ledger stands above everything else in that movie.
Yeah.
And you guys talked about the Mink. I was hoping you guys would do an impression of Christian Bale's Batman voice. I was really...
So, Oz was on one. So, again, he has this rant about Christian Bale. And while
didn't agree. When he insulted the fighter, too, I was like, what are you doing?
So that's where... Again,
I love that movie. I love that movie. With the opening scene when he's running down the street and he's talking to everyone who... from the neighborhood, and they're all greeting him. I love that scene.
Again, it was on my list. So you're preaching to the
choir.
Sorry,
I'm not arguing.
I agree. This is feedback that I love. This is the discourse that we wanted the show to cause. When he went off on the rant, I had like some Bale voices in the chamber. Then I found out how he feels about Christian Bale. Look, this is where your tastes can be different, and people should be intrigued to find out what movies will make the top of Oz's pantheon, which, you know, going forward,
I want to see that for sure.
Next week, there should be a movie you hear next week. I won't spoil it, but if you listen to the episode, the thing we've teased at the end of every episode of Final Review, we play the score of the movie you're going to hear the following week. So it's a tease. And then if you haven't listened by Monday, we just release a trailer on our Twitter account. The next week's movie was Oz's personal, like, I want this in the first five movies we do. So I'm pretty sure you'll get to hear him wax poetic about a movie next week. And maybe I'll go rogue and just, actually, it's not that good. This is hokey. This is stupid. This is one of the most overrated actors. Maybe I'll go full Oz and have a heel turn that makes me criticize a mostly beloved character, you know? But yes, I'm glad that you had a reaction to the podcast the way you did,
Chip. I had
a
strong reaction, very strong reaction. I've never heard anyone talk about The Dark Knight like that.
Well, ever. That's the thing is that and it kind of led to the partnership with Oz and I, is I have put, obviously, as you heard on the pod, I have put superhero movies ahead of The Dark Knight in the past. And then I've rewatched The Dark Knight, like, that's stupid. This is one of the greatest movies ever. I can't there is some superhero bullshit I have to... I'm allowed to curse on here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure. There is some superhero bullshit that you have to accept and be like, this is make-believe. But as an action movie, it's up there with Heat and, you know, Die Hard, and add in the Batman part of it to make it genre and niche-ish. And then you add in the Heath Ledger performance to make it prestigious. And all those make a soup that puts it in like the top 30 percentile of all-time great movies. However, like, Oz, just, he likes the smaller performances. He likes the more human stories that don't have Batman and like a plot at the end that requires a boat of prisoners and a boat of civilians deciding who to blow up, you know? And he's much more like there's a movie called Once that came out in 2007. That's just this very small, first person camera, very small story of a couple that just meets, and it's a very personal, like, his favorite trilogy is the Before trilogy by Richard Linklater. That, I think, is like his taste in movies, which I think will end up being something that is a theme on the show, that the less big the performance is, the more he enjoys it, the more subtlety that he appreciates, you know?
Okay. Well, I'm
again, it's the taste part of it, you know?
Yeah.
For sure. I definitely can't wait to go back and listen to this, because I'm hearing little things and it's kind of making me think, like, what the heck is being said? What, you know? What I'm gathering a little bit, and the reason why I have The Dark Knight, you know, as one of my big movies, again, as you guys touched on, is the Heath Ledger performance. To me, I think that's one of the most fine. And this is just my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the most fine acting jobs that I've seen in any movie. I mean, he plays a role that you legit, there's a, you think there's a psycho out there in the world that's like that. That's how convincing he was. Like, it was that real. It was unbelievable. And what a talented actor Heath Ledger is, because he can do it just about any role. But to me, that's why it's so high. It's just, I didn't even focus on that. There's a lot of things, like you guys say, like Christian Bale.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a good Bruce Wayne, but his Batman voice scares the living crap out of me. Like, it just sounds creepy. It sounds like a trench coat guy. Like,
I'm not wearing weird. Hockey pads. Will yeah. Always be funny.
It's really, really weird. So, I mean, like, I don't even really think about that kind of stuff just because how good Heath Ledger was as a Joker.
What are your guys' top five superhero movies then?
Oh, man. See, my list is probably going to suck because I'll be honest, I'm not a big superhero guy.
Okay.
I'm really not. Like, I haven't watched any of the new Spider-Man movies ever since that.
Are you into the MCU? Out.
No.
No, wow, not. Okay.
Like, I haven't seen the Avengers or anything like that.
I'll give you a list, and I'll give Chip a list. How about instead, what are your top five Christopher – have you seen all the Christopher Nolan movies?
I've seen a good bit of Christopher Nolan movies. But
so what are your top five Nolan movies?
Now I got to think of them.
Okay. Chip, do you have your superhero movies ready?
Dark Knight 1.
I'm going to let you go first. I'm going to think about this. When I say think about it, I'm going to make sure these movies are Christopher Nolan movies.
Yeah.
I didn't.
I know.
Logan's a superhero movie. We're counting Logan, right? I think Logan might be two for me.
Okay.
I want to.
Good questions.
God damn. This is good podcasting, just waiting.
Just waiting. Yeah. So, like, you haven't said an MCU movie yet. You have the entire Raimi Spider-Mans. You have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Incredibles is technically a superhero movie.
Oh, Incredibles.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in, like, 20 years either.
Yeah. So I'll spoil my list for the pod because it's at the very end. But my top five superhero movies – Dark Knight's my number two, behind the noir version of Logan. The black and white version of Logan, to me, is a perfect movie. Then The Dark Knight 2, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is 3, The Incredibles is 4, and then I have Infinity War Endgame as one movie, and I have it as my number 5. Because if Tarantino can do it, so can I.
Do I even like five superhero movies?
This is where, like, taste comes into play. Fan. Yeah.
I mean, as a kid, I did watch, like, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man and was into it. But again, like, if I watched it now, I'd probably be like, yeah, whatever. I don't think I've watched five superhero
That's
movies.
Impressive.
Like, I'm not. I'm a comedy guy.
Five in your whole life?
I don't like superheroes. Like, they just, it bores me.
Well, that's a fair criticism because a lot of them become, like, they win. Like, the movie, you know how it's going to end.
Right. I guess it's Joker, a lot of that superhero of BS characters that we're talking about, where I don't think I've seen a whole lot of Superman movies. I just don't. I'm not a big comic book person. I'm just not. Mm-hmm. Just never really cared for it. I like sport movies. I like comedies, horror films. After I, you know, watched my very first one, and I admit this, I was like a freshman in high school when I finally watched a horror film. Scared the crap out of me.
And what movie?
It was Paranormal Activity. It was the first one I ever watched.
Oh, wow. From beginning to end.
I stayed away for horror films because I was a wuss. You know, like, I was a wuss. But this one, I'm like, I should watch this and be okay. I slept in my little brother's room for like 3 weeks straight after that. Like, I'm not even going to lie. But once I got that good scare out of my way, and you're probably thinking, that movie's not even that scary. It's not. Just never watched one before. After I got that out of the way, I could watch just about anything, and it don't bother me no more. But I'm a big horror film now. And like I said, you know, any kind of sport movie.
What's your favorite horror movie?
Oh, God. Yeah, I love The Conjuring.
Yeah.
Conjuring is probably my favorite horror film.
Conjuring is up there. And we have a horror month coming in October.
Oh, cool.
So
I'm telling you what, this podcast is really cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah, but I don't think I can give you five superhero
movies. All right, no worries.
I don't.
And this is where the pod helps in that, like, you may be introduced to some movies you haven't seen while listening that may pique your interest. Right? And that's where you can follow us on Letterboxd. Every movie that is mentioned, we put into a Letterboxd list throughout the pod. So you can go and check our Letterboxd. It's a list of all the movies that were mentioned in episode one or episode two and so on and so forth. And, oh, this is that movie that stars Andrew Garfield or stars Christian Bale that we can check out, or stars Aaron Eckhart, the guy who plays Two-Face in The Dark Knight. So we have ways that give opinion. We also have ways that are interactive. And we also have, like, a hint of recommendation involved in the pod as well. Do either of you have a Nolan top five?
I don't think I can name five movies. I know many, but I'm in the Batman's, of course. He made Inception, right?
Yes, he made Inception.
Okay. I seen that.
Thought it was so.
I was confused the whole damn time. That was way above my intelligent level.
Uh-huh.
That was just way too above it. I was confused.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. So how were you supposed to get it?
That's where I landed on Inception, is that I've seen it probably close to 20 times, and every time I see it, my opinion changes. So, like, I'll rewatch it and say, oh, I got it. I now understand it. This movie's a masterpiece. Then the next time I rewatch it, nope, confused. This movie is weird. I don't understand it whatsoever. And then the next time, oh, I picked up on it. I got what you did there, Chris Nolan. Mm-hmm. This is great. And then so, like, the cycle just repeats going forward. But that's Nolan. He almost requires a rewatch, because the puzzle that you're trying to solve throughout the movie is really what your first watch is. Then the mask is pulled off and you realize it was whoever the whole time. And then the second time, you're picking up on the clues that he left you throughout the movie.
Dunkirk, you didn't need to do that, though. I love
what,
that
movie. I
love Dunkirk. You didn't need to rewatch.
It's my number six.
Oh, no, you didn't need to rewatch that. Yeah. Oh, no, you didn't put Dunkirk on your top five, right?
No. I thought you were mad at me for not putting it on
top
No.
I wasn't saying that. No. I like Dunkirk a lot.
I do, too. I've seen it, like, three times. And, like, the third time felt like homework because, as I said on the pod, I know they get off the beach. It's very well done filmmaking. It is probably the best thing that Nolan's done. I'm much more, I care about plot a lot. I like saying, did you see that? Did you see that story unfold? And yeah, the story of Normandy is historical, so we know how that story goes. So
that's true.
Yeah.
It was just fun. It was cool to watch, I guess. It's not my favorite of his, but it was just cool to watch. I don't like it more than Dark Knight or Inception.
I just looked up a lot of his movies because I know a lot of them, and I really haven't seen a lot of these movies. Now I'm starting to feel bad about myself. Like, I thought I was somebody.
No, now we've given you homework. We've given you homework now.
I'm like, oh my God, like, there's all these movies I don't even know about. I feel pretty bad about myself. I usually say I know movies. I know, like, you know, things like that, because one of the big jokes at the radio station I work at is I don't know music. Like, people that you don't know who this is? No. And if they play something, I'll go, oh, yeah, I heard of that, but I can't name musicians. I can't. I just cannot do it. And I always claim I'm a movie guy. This is making me say I don't even know anything about movies. Like, this is making me feel really, really bad.
I know way more about TV than I do about movies.
Well, obviously, Couch Critic.
Yes. Thank you.
I am really interested in this. Like, I'm going to definitely check this out, like, as I'm doing my homework. I don't know if that's a good idea, because then I may not get anything done.
Nolan in particular. Well, okay, might not get anything done. Nolan in particular, you need to focus on the movies.
Yeah.
So I got to focus. So maybe this is going to be the drive time, because I got about a 30, 35-minute drive to work every day. So
I wouldn't watch a movie while you're driving.
No. that wouldn't be. Yeah, that's not what I'm doing here.
Well,
I'm just gonna listen to this.
A little bit of my cinephile history. Like, I didn't start getting into movies until around 2013. I I was going through a bit of a breakup, and one of the ways that I dealt with it was I went to the movies every day because it was like a 2-hour respite from like what the real world was doing, you know? And so that's when I started to be like, oh, I escapism, look at this. And then I started to see myself on screen and relate to characters and understand the power of storytelling and what it can do and the healing powers that movies can have. And it led down a path of me wanting to understand the elements of filmmaking and how these movies are made. And obviously, like, it's nowhere near as extensive as like people that go to film school and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's a passion of mine for sure. And it's almost an obsession to an extent. Like this weekend's my plan. My girlfriend has a brunch on Saturday, which then let me know I have some free time to go into New York City to do a double feature. And I would just sit in a movie theater with my phone off for 6 hours and watch two separate movies that are out this weekend that no one will care about, that will not win awards, probably nobody will see, but I will be able to escape into this world for 6 hours and be fine. And that's, you know, the people, we have our passions, we have our likes, and this is one of mine for sure, you know?
See, and now one thing I'm getting excited about is, you know, you said you have a whole horror month.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not going to go like, oh, what are you guys going to talk about type things.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, this is the beauty of it. I'm hearing the conversation, and I start thinking, I'm like, okay, what are they going to talk about? Like, because when it comes to horror, I'm not like a zombie guy. You know, like a World War Z. That's not horror to me. That's just stupid. Like, that, again, that's kind of like the approach I look at as a superhero. It's like, it's not realistic. It's not going to happen. You know what I mean?
I think there's two different kinds of horror fans.
Okay.
There's like the gore porn, which I don't look down on. I understand like there is a audience for that. Like the, like you said, the zombie kind, like the Hostels, the Saws, the like this is just
Hills Have Eyes.
There's, you know, like there's this messed up movie called Terrifier that came out a couple years ago that I'm very regretful that I saw, but it was shot in Long Island. So I was like, oh, it's a low budget horror movie. I'll check it out. And the horror nerd Facebook group I was in highly recommended it. I was not a fan. But like, it's the slasher genre. It's the Friday the 13th. Yeah. It's the Freddy Krueger's. And it's a glorification of bringing that fear that's supposed to come from a horror movie. And it is more about the, did you see that insane kill? Which I'm personally not that big a fan of. However, the other kind of horror movie fan I am, and it's like it's the paranormal, the Conjurings, the sight unseen, and I think a lot of it has to do, and this is like my general philosophy about horror movies, is that the actual thing you're afraid of in these movies is not what's on the poster. Like, you're not afraid in The Blair Witch of a witch in the woods. You're afraid of getting lost in the woods. That's the actual fear. The Conjuring, you're not actually afraid of these demonic forces that may be attacking you or this house. You're empathizing with these parents that have something wrong with their kids and they have no clue how to stop it or how to fix it, which is a general human reaction that a lot of us feel. And that's the type of horror movie I enjoy and I can relate to. It's why, like, Paranormal Activity, like the something's wrong with the house trope, got, and the found footage thing got done to death, but like that is a thing. And it's, I've called it with my, in my personal circle, those types of movies are the something's wrong with the noun. So like this movie called Hereditary, something's wrong with the daughter, something's wrong with the mom, something's wrong with the son, something's wrong with the house, something's wrong with the car, you know? So it's the Pennywise, something's wrong with the clown, you know? Like, if you're just going through that and you're still trying to solve what is wrong with it, the actual like unknown is what's fearful. And that I think is more where I lean in the horror genres.
And again, I mean, just hearing just this little snippet of it and some of the things right here, so many different side conversations. Chip, I totally get what you're saying. I haven't even listened yet. And all I'm thinking about is, God, how do they go about this or that or this? So this is a really unique kind of twist on movies. Yeah. You know, it's not just, all right, we're going to talk about a movie and give our thoughts on it. It has something, as you said, kind of a measurable kind of approach to it in different categories there, which I think makes it very, very unique. So folks, you got to check this out. I know I am. I'm going to listen to this Dark Knight episode tomorrow on my way to work for sure. So check out Final Review. Don't put the word though in it.
There you go.
You don't do it. But check out Final Review. I like it.
Well, thank
you. I'm telling you.
Thank you.
You already got me hooked. And I haven't listened yet.
That's an incredible sales job by me, apparently. There's a billion movie podcasts out there. So when Oz and I originally talked about linking up, the idea of just doing a movie pod would have been fun, but we wanted to do something a little more unique. Right. And when I tell you that I first reached out to him in September of 2020, like, we've been at this for a year trying to figure out what would work. And we did a ton of research and a ton of demos to prepare for this. So it's a well put, like, listen, I'm obviously talking about the work I do, so it's going to sound a little conceited, but I'm actually very proud of the work that what we've created and the work that the way the show sounds and what we've done with this show. And I highly recommend it for anybody that's like a cinephile or anybody that just wants to hear about movies they may have slept on over the years. That, I think, is the beauty of this podcast, is as you're listening, a lot of movies get added to your recommendations. And if you're looking for a movie to watch on a Friday night, go to our Letterboxd, then you'll see a list of like 40 or 50 movies, and you'll see, oh, that's the movie they recommended. We should check it out. So,
yeah, this is definitely something y'all need to check out. I just went really Southern there with y'all, which usually I don't like to say, but when I'm in school working with kids, that's what they respond to. If I hit them with a "you all," they're looking at me weird. I'm in the South now, so I have to say y'all. I just caught myself. I don't typically like to say that unless if I'm at work or around people, and I just I don't like it. I don't like that aspect of it, but it just slipped out. But you all have to check this one out, because, I mean, like I said, I haven't even listened to an episode yet, and I'm already interested, and my brain's already working, thinking about different things. Definitely going to be checking out the horror, the episodes for that. I can't wait for that. I'm really excited when that comes out.
So, Chip, did I lose you already because of the Dark Knight slander?
No, not at all. Not at all. I tweeted out I recommend the podcast.
That's my favorite part about it, is that I'm curious how many people are going to hate listen going forward because of the Dark Knight takes.
I am fascinated to see your co-host is Oz, right?
Yes, Oz.
Sorry, Oz, what movies he likes going forward after listening to that. So I can't wait to hear. You said he likes the movie that's out next week.
Yes.
So
yes.
I can't wait to hear that. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I listened to the entire episode where one person had a totally negative opinion of it.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's how good it was. I couldn't turn it off. Despite such a negative opinion of a movie that I love, one of my favorite movies ever. It's a great podcast. Everyone should listen to it. It's just, yeah, it's, I highly recommend it. And I'm not just saying that because of how highly I think of Andrew. It's a great podcast.
You're saying it in spite of how highly you think.
In spite of how highly I think of Andrew.
There you go. Thank you guys. I mean, this is much greatly appreciated. Mm-hmm. I hope that going forward that there are movies that we both agree on. You know, there are even elements of The Social Network that Oz and I were conflicting on. But again, that's the whole idea of the formula, is that people's pantheons are not supposed to be the same. And that's okay when it comes to movies. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
But move on. We'll change some topics here, because we are getting very close to the start of the NFL season. First game kicks off today. Cowboys, Buccaneers, Tom Brady, who cares? Just want him to retire already and disappear. Him and his Uggs just need to just ride away in the sunset and never return. But it's the start of football season. I couldn't be more excited. Usually I'm really pumped up and excited. But as a Jet fan, that usually changes by week one or week two. Then you're just looking for the season to be over. At least the last several years has been like that. Not going to lie to you guys, I have a little bit of optimistic and hope I'm liking what I see from Zach. Yeah, he changes. Andrew changes to a Jet hat. I like it. But I got a little hope that we might have drafted the right guy. I mean, maybe it's just because I just cannot live with another failed quarterback development. But I liked what I seen from Zach Wilson so far. You know, and it's not that I didn't like him coming into the draft. I was just a little sketched out about failing again. And so far, I know it's preseason. He didn't play up against starting defenses. But I liked what I seen. He's given me a little bit of hope. I'm ready for this season to begin. And all I can say is last year's Knicks season, I had zero expectations. I had 17 wins on my mind, okay? And it was one of the best seasons that I've seen in a while. I haven't had more fun watching Knicks basketball since 2013, but I think I even enjoyed it even more, you know, because it was just completely unexpected. And maybe that magic can rub off on the Jets and we're looking at a winning season. I don't think so. Wouldn't bet on it, but I have hope. What do y'all think about football season kicking off? And let's talk a little bit about the Jets and the outlook for us. Chip, I'll start with you. What do you think this Jet team's going to be able to do this year?
I can't believe we're hoping that the Knicks rub off on another team.
Right?
That positive sounds way. Weird.
How the turntables, man. Jeez.
Oh, my God. Wow, crazy. I think we finally have a good coaching staff in place. Yes. And that's just like, to compare it to the Knicks, people in place that we can trust.
Yes.
For the first time that I can remember in a long, long time. As much as I really liked Rex Ryan, I was younger when he was the coach, and I was like, man, I like this guy. Looking back on it, it was like we were never going to get that far with him as the coach.
His press conferences were great. Yeah. Like, I watched every one just because they were comical. And I mean, I would sat through 30 minutes of it just to listen to him.
But that's what he was. He was a hype man. He was like he wasn't a great coach, but he was a great defensive guy. But it feels like we finally have people in place now who we should be able to trust. And I mean, obviously the key is Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
And is he the right guy? It's preseason, but I liked what I saw.
I agree.
I really did. And it bothered me when I saw it. Like, it bothered me enough when I saw a tweet like, let's chill on preseason. People used to say that Mark Sanchez was poised in preseason. I think it was Trey Wingo who tweeted that Mark Sanchez was poised or something. And I was like, no one ever said that about Mark Sanchez. Like, I already have a higher opinion of Zach Wilson than I ever did of Mark Sanchez. Like, I never trusted in Mark Sanchez, ever. I already have more faith in this kid now to do well. I'm not saying he's going to be like a Pro Bowler, but it sucks to say this because he's a rookie, but a lot rides on him. Like, so much rides on him because the receiving core is obviously not very strong. I like that they invested a lot in the offensive line. I think that was huge, huge. But yeah, I mean, it kind of begins and ends with him despite all that. So we'll see. I mean, they're over under 6.5, and I would put money on the over just for the hell of it because weird stuff happens. It's the NFL. Remember that year the Jaguars almost went to the Super Bowl? Like, it's the NFL. It's weird. I don't know. We don't know how good the coaching staff is going to be. We don't know how good Salah is going to be. Maybe he's another Sean McVay. I have no idea, but I'd put money on the over.
Okay. So I'd like to plug a friend of the pod, Alex Trateros and John Malika. They had me on last night or the night before. I forget which night, but we went through the entire – I went on Knicks, Jets, et cetera, and did a Jets episode with them. And we went through the entire Jets schedule. I see 6 wins this year, but it's not a knock on Wilson. I am just as excited about Zach Wilson. It's literally just the roster around him may not be ready to win more than 6 games, which is frustrating because I think they're going to get a not Adam Gase boost on this team. Like, the fact that Gase is gone is good for 2 or 3 wins. And if Carl Lawson was healthy,
yes,
I'd be so much higher on this season. I'd be closer to 8 or 9 or 10 wins if that were real. But it's a game changer. It's like last year with the 49ers losing Joey Bosa that early in the season changed everything for that team. And it's why they went 7-9 last year. So I'm a little more skeptical, especially in a division where I think there's three potential playoff teams that they have. I do think they're finally going to beat the Eagles. I think this will be the year that the Jets have never, they're 0-9 in their history against the Eagles. Any Jet fan knows that.
Yep.
And this will be the year that they finally beat the Eagles. Having said that, it's going to be one of their six wins. They have a bit more of a difficult schedule. Like they play Brady's division. So obviously they play Darnold. They play the Saints. They play the Falcons, who a lot of people are projecting to be better than they were last year. I will say I am, to bring it to the Knicks, I'm a little more confident in this coaching staff, similar to how I was with the Knicks, with the hiring of Tibbs and the army of assistant coaches that they put together, and the competence at the top, I think, will finally get to show with Joe Douglas now having a couple drafts under his belt where he's in charge of the depth pieces on this roster. To get more, like Jeremy actually texted me today, will the Jets win more than six games? And I knew it's because the Jets over 6.5. Yeah. And I was like, I don't see them winning more than six. No. And he was like, they could win six, right? And I was like, yes, but the over is not a good bet. I think the number actually became six for him. Whatever book he was looking at, the number was six. So he was wondering, like, is the over or under a good bet? And it's like, I think they're going to win six games this year. So the safer bet to me would be the under. And it's because if the quarterback goes down, this is a lost season, which is like, I mean, that happens in the NFL. However, what's gotten me excited about Zach Wilson, it's partially the preseason, the draft combine, the videos from BI We Buy Who They Look. The big thing, Chris Sims, Tony Romo, all of these talking heads that I may be falling for it, but the Patrick Mahomes comparisons that have been thrown around, even if he just falls short and is Brett Favre, like, fine. Like, these are the talent evaluators that are usually right. The number one quarterback on Chris Sims' draft board 2 years ago, Lamar Jackson, already won an MVP. Yeah. The number one quarterback on his draft board last year, Justin Herbert. We saw what that went. The number one quarterback on his draft board this year, Zach Wilson, ahead of Trevor Lawrence. I trust Chris Sims with his evaluation because he's largely got it right.
Great point.
And if he's right about my quarterback, then the sky is the limit. Then, yeah, if the quarterback with a roster that's probably meant to be 6-11 goes 10-7 this year, like, all bets are off next year when they now have a chance to go put some talent around this quarterback and potentially create a legitimate run. Maybe he's like Russell Wilson and we're going to be good for the next 10 years.
You know, and it's kind of funny that both said it, because last Saturday we did our NFL prediction, division winners, Super Bowl, all that crap. And it's funny because anytime you, like, when I mention something about the Jets positive, people like hear that and they text me or they'll call in and laugh or something. They think what I'm saying means that we're going to be a Super Bowl team this year. They don't quite hear everything else that's being said. Because those were the exact words that I said, was for the first time in a long time, I feel like this organization has done the right things with the coaching staff. I think Joe Douglas is the right guy to run the team. He's slowly kind of getting to put his kind of plan into place and how he wants to do something. And I have confidence with this team. That does not mean we're Super Bowl bound this year. Like, I have to tell people this, like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying they're heading in the right direction. I think they're finally doing things that are smart, and I love Sal. I think he's the right kind of the energy, you know, the competition, you know, like, I think he's a great fit. Very excited that he's our head coach. And, you know, I look at Zach Wilson as we talked about, what's he going to be this year? I'm kind of hoping just to see a rookie season like Justin Herbert had last year, right? He won 4 or 5 games. That's it. They were 5-11 or something like that. And yet his numbers were off the chart. He went toe-to-toe with Tom Brady and just like was airing it out, you know. And I know he's got some good receivers. He's got a good running back with Eckler. He's got some.
Oh no,
there.
Justin Herbert's the real deal.
But yeah. That's the thing. It's like it's what I mean is it might be better skill position, skill position players, but that kid can freaking ball. And it's that's what I live with that. We win 4, 5, 6 games, but Zach Wilson puts up those kind of numbers, then you go, we got something here, and we can move on and continue to build from that. That's what I'm hoping to see out of him, and I think he can. I think he can. You know, when training camp started and you heard all these things about, God, he's throwing picks left and right, and then he came out in the press conference and he was like, you know, I'm doing things to see what I can get away with. And, you know, I'm not going to do that stuff in a game. I just want to see what my limits are. I'm not going to lie to you. I went, Oh God, this guy is like, he's
really
full of himself. Like,
Okay.
Like, who are you fooling? Like,
this I was happy when I said that.
Right.
I was happy when he said that.
I thought he was trying to
BS me. And I'm like, this guy is going to be doing idiotic things that are going to cause me
practice.
To break my TV.
Yeah. You're supposed to do idiotic things in practice.
But I wasn't buying it. I wasn't buying it. I was like, first off, you're throwing picks to the Jets secondary, you're scaring me.
Fair.
That secondary is terrible.
That's fair. Okay?
That secondary is terrible.
It's still practice.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Not a game.
When he came out into the game and he's doing some of these things and I'm seeing his decision making, I went, okay, I buy in. I'll shut up now. Like, I'm a little less scared. Like, I just hope to see kind of that Justin Herbert kind of season for him, even if it's a little bit worse. Just something that you can go, you know what, we weren't that great that this year, but he was pretty damn good, and we got something to build on. I'm very excited about Elijah Moore. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that we would see him in the preseason, but I think he's going to be a weapon for the Jets moving forward. Something else that I said here that people overreacted, like I said, he's going to be a freaking pro baller his rookie year. Like, it's what I got to deal with, guys. It's what I deal with. But all I said was I'm excited about him. Like, 1 year, I said – a couple of years back, I said – it was right after they went, like, 7-9 with Gase's, like, first year.
His first year, yeah.
That team sucked, and they won 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
And I said the next season, they could possibly – they have 10 winnable games. Somehow, that translated to me to listeners saying – they're going to win 10 games. I didn't say that. I said they have 10 winnable games, which means you still might lose those games, but they're going to be in it. Some of them might turn. You can go 1-9 in those. You can go 9-1. You can go 10-0. You can go 0-10. That does not mean wins. I just, this is what I deal with down here. This is what I deal with. You know, people like to give me a hard time. But.
Little did you know that in that season of 10 winnable games, there wouldn't be 10 like watchable games, let alone winnable games on the Jets schedule.
That's a very Francesa thing to say, Matt. They got 10. They got 10 winnable games on their schedule, and to just abandon
that
prediction.
That roster the next year was a lot better than what they had on the year before. It just didn't work out. It was a horrible, horrible display of football. Which I am hoping to God, Week 1 isn't a horrible display of football because tickets I had to spend. Over $100 to sit up in the nosebleed section.
Are you going to I'll try you down there. So you're going to Carolina.
It's about an hour and a half away from me.
All right.
So
you're going to Charlotte.
I'm going there. We got about 11 family members, and we're living dangerously because we're sitting on the Panthers sideline.
Have you been to Charlotte, to the M&T Bank Arena? What's
Bank
it called
of America.
Again?
Yeah, the Bank of America.
That's right,
Stadium.
Bank of America Arena. Yeah, have you been there before?
I have for a preseason game. I got free tickets. Somebody's like, you want to go? I think they played like the Bears. And I mean, Charlotte's, I was telling you, Chip, this a couple of weeks ago, Charlotte, for anything, is a really good place to watch a game. Like the Knicks, when they come and they play at the Spectrum Arena, you can park across the street for $10. I mean, literally across the street for $10.
It's very not New York.
Yeah.
I've been to. It used to be Time Warner. It's not Time
Warner. Yeah, Time Warner. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it used to be the Time Warner Arena. And when I lived in Virginia, I would go down to there to see the Knicks play. All 6 years that I lived in Virginia, I went down, I think, four. Yes, because here's the legend. I went down 4 different times to see the Knicks play the Bobcats and then the Hornets.
Yep.
And all 4 times, Melo played exactly 1 minute in all total. So there was this game where he got hurt a minute in. And then the next time, they had already clinched the division in the 2013 season. They had already clinched the 2 seed. So him, Amari, Tyson, all of them sat. And I was like, why did I drive 3 hours to Charlotte to watch the B team play? And then the last 2 times I went, he was hurt the first time. And then the last time was during the Porzingis year where they were tanking. And they were like 5-37 when I showed up. And I was like, I'm making a day out of this. I'm not going to a Knicks game to watch nobody I care about play. We went and saw American Sniper at that movie theater in Charlotte in the morning. And then I went to the game at night. It was Kemba Walker.
What's crazy is we went to the same game.
So we were at the same game. Yes, so that was Kemba Walker bobblehead night. Ironically.
Yes. Yeah. I still
have this Hornets bobblehead in my room.
Yes. You know? That is so crazy. That's a small world right there. That is insane. There you go. But, yeah, I would go there, you know, watch the games. The last one I went to, I was right behind the Knicks bench on the lower level for like $80. You know, right there by the tunnel where they come into. So I talked to Walt Clyde Frazier for a couple of minutes. You know, Tosh Gibson. It was pretty cool. They haven't won a game that I've been to, I've been to only one game at the Garden. I only went one time.
Oh wow!
At the Garden, it was against the Bobcats. We lost by 20. I never won a game. There was one time I had tickets, and down here, when we get snow, we don't really get snow. We get ice. And when we get ice, it shuts down the state for like a month. Like, it's bad. So a dusting of snow will close schools down all over the state. But the ice is pretty bad. And we did get a bad ice storm, I call it. And right where we were, we couldn't make it out to Charlotte. So I ended up losing money. And I'm watching the game, and I'm like, if they win this freaking game, I swear to God, I'm going to be so mad that I finally would have had tickets to a game they won. They didn't win that game.
Mm-hmm.
I had my heart ripped out by Kemba. The Knicks were down 20 one night, and they came all the way back, took a 1-point lead with like 4 seconds left. And Kemba blew right past Prigioni. I mean, he didn't even have like one of his killer crossovers. It was literally like a slow motion crossover, and Prigioni just got burnt, and there's nobody at the rim, and he lays it in at the buzzer. And I just wanted to cry. I was walking out of the arena. Somebody that I went to college with was screaming my name, and like, Matt. And I'm just looking at who's calling me. And I don't even know who this kid is. And the only reason why I know we went to college together is because he told me and we had class together. And he's like, you remember me? I said, dude, I just lost at the buzzer. I don't care who the hell you are. I'm going home. I got an hour and a half to sit in my sorrow and replay this over and over again. But Charlotte's not a bad place to go watch a game. That's all I'm saying. Tickets are not very cheap. You know, parking's reasonable. So I'm looking forward to it. This would be the first actual game, not a preseason game. Hard to find tickets because it's the opening week. And we got so many family members here now. So everybody wanted to go, which makes it even harder to find tickets to fit us all in.
Chip,
so
you been to Charlotte?
Never been there. Never. Okay.
You're in Jersey, right?
Yeah, in Jersey.
Think Newark, but with a football stadium in the middle of it. Like the Red Bull Stadium, but like it's the NFL, you know?
Oh, Red Bull Stadium's super nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, think, like, the Newark. It's really small. If you go, like, 5 miles any direction, it's just the views of North Carolina. I guess technically even South Carolina because the border's right there. My roommate in college lived in Belmont, which is 2 minutes from Charlotte. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chip, if you ever come down here, you stay with me, okay? We'll go to a Knick game down in Charlotte. It's only an hour and a half drive. There you go.
Kemba Walker, you know? Homecoming.
There we go. I'm just saying. Yeah. You want to take a trip, get out somewhere, go somewhere you've never been? We can do that. We can go. I've never been down to Atlanta for a game, and I'm thinking of going to Atlanta.
Well, now you have to. There's a rivalry.
I want to. I already have the date scheduled. The only question is if I'm on a call for a basketball game for ESPN Plus, and obviously I won't be able to. So I'm hoping there's an off week, which is not typically the case from January to March. But, you know, fingers crossed. Hopefully I can get to it. Or if it's an early game, like a noon start, which never happens either. They always start the games either at 2 or 4. I can make it down there and watch a game. But with that being said, I do think, you know, that should do it. I know we had some things that we'll probably hold off until another podcast, but I like to always ask before we wrap it up, the last call part of the show here. Did we cover everything that we wanted to? Any of the topics we discussed today? Anybody want to add anything to it? Now is your time to get that out.
Andrew, I think start.
I'll start. I mean, you guys spent most of the show promoting my new podcast. So that's why that's literally like what is dominating my life right now. I will spend a little bit of time promoting Oz. He has a movie website called The Invention of Dreams that is in its soft launch right now. That is where you could find his regular film reviews. He's covering the Telluride Film Festival right now, remotely, which might be the way we cover movie festivals going forward. So you can check out all of his stuff there, theinventionofdreams.com. He will be on the Knicks Film School podcast tomorrow with John Macri. Those who don't know John Macri, he's the host of the Knicks Film School podcast. He is also Oz's law school buddy, which is how I met Oz, is through John. And that should be interesting to see them. And here's something I'll even plug even more about the Knicks Film School podcast, with specifically this one. I've never heard John disagree with Oz. And I'm going to, as the producer of this episode, ask that question. Have you ever, and try and find a wedge between them, because then Oz gets to be my friend going forward. And we do have a Patreon, which we just did, and maybe this is something you guys can look into for some content you want to fill. We're going through the last couple decades of the NBA on our Patreon, and we're drafting all decade teams. So the most recent one we did dropped today. The preview's available on our podcast feed. John, Chris Persiainen, and myself, we went through the decade and drafted three separate 10-man teams from 2010 to 2019. So from Kobe's last ring to Kawhi's second ring. So this is pre-Durant and Kyrie going to Brooklyn. This is like just right before the decision. And we took turns drafting 10-man teams. It's a fun episode. You guys should consider potentially drafting your own all decade teams if you're interested, and you can hear our teams over at KnicksFilmSchool.com, the patreon.com/KnicksFilmSchool. That's really all I got to plug. Enjoy final review. I promise that the takes, while hot, are enjoyable to listen to. And tune in next time to our next episode, which is obviously every Thursday.
Every Thursday, okay.
Every Thursday. And guys, as always, thank you for having me on. This is a lot of fun. And I hesitate to do this because they've let me down a lot in the past, but J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets.
All right. Well, I think that's the best way to end the podcast. So let's go ahead. We'll wrap it up, and we'll be back with another episode of the Knicks State of Mind podcast real soon.
Boom.